हरिः ॐ सहनावावधु सहनौ भुनक्थु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 35, Chapter 87, Canto 10, Prayers of the Personified Vedas. So, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following. The person who thinks he cannot know Brahman completely can know Brahman. He who thinks he knows Brahman completely does not know Brahman. For those who think they know Brahman, Brahman cannot be realized. For those who understand they cannot know Brahman completely, Brahman can be realized. Keno Upanishad 2:3. Right, so means Krishna being transcendental, he reveals his position. It's not that we ourselves can understand through our intelligence. Right? So if we understand that and we're surrendered to the Lord, then we can know the Lord. But otherwise, for the materialist who thinks he's very smart, he'll never know. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the personified Vedas continue to pray. Dear Lord, they said, from all Vedic information, it is understood that you are the supreme controller and all living entities are controlled. See, the duality has come up.
Yes.
Because before it was in that neutral state.
Very short.
Yeah. Yes. Dear Lord, they said, from all Vedic information it is understood that you are the supreme controller and all living entities are controlled. Both the Lord and the living entities are called Nitya, eternal, and so are qualitatively one. Yet the singular Nitya, or the supreme Lord, is the controller, whereas the plural Nityas are controlled. The individual controlled living entities resides within the body, and the supreme controller, as Supersoul, is also present there. But the Supersoul controls the individual soul. That is the verdict of the Vedas. If the individual soul were not controlled by the Supersoul, then how could one explain the Vedic version that a living entity transmigrates from one body to another and enjoys or suffers the effects of his past deeds, sometimes being promoted to a higher standard of life and sometimes being degraded in a lower standard? Right? Because if they weren't under the control of the Supreme Lord, who would subject themselves to this? Right? Everybody would be the most important, most respected, most powerful, most opulent person in the universe. Each and every one of them. Right? Could you imagine, you know, unlimited Lord Indras? Right? You know, all sitting around. And yeah. So, that's how they're controlled. Every living entity is under this control of the Lord's nature. Yeah. Thus, the conditioned souls are not only under the control of the Supreme Lord, but are also conditioned by the control of the material nature. They start to like these different methods to try to control and enjoy that they're subjected to by the modes. And then they think, oh, this is valuable. They go after that, and just karma goes that way. When they get tired of that, then they go after something else. This relationship of the living entities with the Supreme Lord as the controlled and the controller definitely proves that although the Supersoul is all-pervasive, the living entities are never all-pervasive, right? Because you're just in that one body. You don't know what's going on elsewhere. If the living individual souls were all-pervasive, there would be no question of their being controlled. The theory that the Supersoul and the individual soul are equal is therefore a polluted conclusion, and no sensible person accepts it. Rather, one should try to understand the distinctions between the supreme eternal and the subordinate eternals. If that one point is accepted, then all other aspects of the philosophy can be appreciated. Right? But the difficulty comes up is because that point's not accepted. I'm not the controller and enjoyer. Therefore, then the philosophy can't be appreciated. With our material senses, we can perceive neither the supreme, who is greater than the greatest, nor the individual small, who is smaller than the smallest. We have to understand both him who is greater than the greatest and him who is smaller than the smallest from the authoritative sources of Vedic literature. The Vedic literature states that the Supersoul is sitting within the heart of every living entity's body and is as big as a thumb. Therefore, the argument may be put forward. How can something the size of a thumb be accommodated within the heart of an ant? The answer is that this thumb measurement of the Supersoul is imagined in proportion to the body of the living entity. So how big is an ant thumb? That's how big the Supersoul is. Right? In no circumstance, therefore, can the Supersoul and the individual soul, individual living entity, be taken as one. Right? Because he's always different. He's always making, he expands, he does all these things, he pervades everything. They don't. Although both of them enter within the material body of the living entity, the Supersoul lives within the heart to direct or control the living entity, although both are dhruva, or eternal. The living entity is always under the direction of the Supreme. It may be argued that because the living entities are born of the material nature, they are all equal and independent. In the Vedic literature, however, it is said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead impregnates the material nature with the living entities, and then they come out. Therefore, the appearance of the individual living entities is not factual due to the material nature alone. Just as a child produced by a woman is not her independent production, a woman is first impregnated by a man, and then a child is produced. As such, the child produced by the woman is part and parcel of the man. Similarly, the living entities are apparently produced by the material nature, but are not independently. It is due to the impregnation of the material nature by the Supreme Father that the living entities are present. Therefore, the argument that the individual living entities are not parts and parcels of the Supreme cannot stand. For example, the different parts of the body cannot be taken as equal to the whole. Rather, the whole body is the controller of the different limbs. Similarly, the parts and parcels of the Supreme Whole are always dependent and are always controlled by the source of the parts and parcels. It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that the living entities are parts and parcels of Krishna. Mamaivam saha. No sane man, therefore, will accept the theory that the Supersoul and the individual soul are of the same category. They are equal in quality, but quantitatively, the Supersoul is always the Supreme, and the individual soul is always subordinate to the Supersoul. That is the conclusion of the Vedas. Right? So we see that as far as qualities go, then they're the same as the Supreme Lord. But as we discussed before, that sameness is those qualities that are useful in relationship. Right? Those qualities that he does as God, like, creates the universes. We don't have to have, it's not like, hey, I'm creating this and you're creating that, aren't we cool? We could be friends, Right? So, those things, those you see are different. Or that he's the all-attractive, that all are attracted to him. So those last four qualities. So between the 50, 51 through 59, those are because of him being God. Right? The 50 qualities are the common ones between all the living entities, meaning the God and the living entity, but he has greater amounts of it. But, because he deals with so many at once. And then the last four, these are then everyone can do, the all attractiveness in which the living entities relate to him. Does that make sense? So, they have this, when it says here they have the same for the purpose of interaction. But he being God, he does have more. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. And you see, not even this. 64 is given because that's how much we can relate to. Otherwise, there's unlimited, but we won't be discussing that.
So, what is mentioned about the knowledge in the Vedas is how the living entity should relate to God, only in this connection. Because there is more knowledge of how Krishna does his stuff, like, you know, how he's managing the whole living entity. So
but how much do we need to know? We only need to know enough to understand we're being controlled. And whatever mechanical things would be used for performing your activities and duties. But what's beyond our duties, that's not our business. You know, so God's, you know, what he does, that's not, we don't need to know, because we can't. We don't have that unlimited intelligence. So he's doing all those different things. And except for what is useful in reestablishing our relationship or functioning in that relationship, then there's no need. Right? That's why Ananta say she's been talking since time immemorial, and he's still talking, and he still will be talking. Because the glories are unlimited. But, you know, he can understand them since he's God himself.
Prabhupada many times mentions that living entity, as we cannot know how much blood is flowing, how much how lungs are taking care. So when we hear, we understand, yes, you know, it's we are very small. But this consciousness is like not always consistent. So
it means that we're really small.
Yeah.
So when you forget you're small, you become big. Yeah. That's why the process of sadhana and Krishna consciousness is so that we come to the position where we're always appreciating and understanding, you know, always being absorbed in Krishna. So that's the point, is to become 100% absorbed exclusively in that which is connected to Krishna. Krishna and what's connected to him. Does that make sense? That's what we're trying to do. That's why we're always hearing and chanting. The innumerable living entities are prone to fall down to the material world from the spiritual world when influenced by the illusory energy. And it is also possible for the living entity to be liberated again when, by cultivation of real knowledge, he becomes completely freed from the contamination of the material world. Right? So the illusory, so when you remove illusion, then you can go back to the spiritual world. But that means we're servant of Krishna. It's not the volume of knowledge or the technical knowledge, it's that we understand we're servant of Krishna, and we have that desire to please Krishna through that service. That's the knowledge that gets us back. So how much knowledge is necessary for us to appreciate that, then that's how much then we involve ourselves in. Right? Yes?
Nowadays, people in general, and devotees in specific, have much more knowledge and information than what they practice actually. It's, even if they practice 10%, it would be good, actually. Mm. So, this volume of knowledge, what do we do with it?
The point is that you're supposed to engage it in the Lord's service, so why have it if you're not going to contemplate it in connection with the Lord? So even if you have information, then when it comes up, it should be contemplated how that serves the Lord, how it connects to the Lord, how you would practically use it. If you see that, then you might start using that knowledge. Because the point is, you also have so much knowledge that's there that culminates in a specific thing. So as long as that conclusion of all that vast body of knowledge is being engaged in the Lord's service, then all the other parts are connected. You know, so if you're not absorbed always, then at least at the end point, if that is connected to Krishna, then it takes on that transcendental quality. Right? But at some point, then all that knowledge can be seen and used. Because you have so much knowledge that you need to be able to do something. And so when you can do that, you're engaging actually that knowledge. So seemingly the volume of knowledge is great, but its application is actually not as great. Meaning by volume. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let us say the first time you sit down and you see and read about the full Atman. That's going to take you some time to go through, try to understand, get the things like this and that. So it appears the knowledge is very big. But when you actually apply it, it's only going to take you like 6-7 seconds. You know what I'm saying? And so that's the things. You have so much knowledge that you have to know, then when you apply it, it seems that the application not so much is being used, but actually quite a volume is being used. So if one's always contemplating all these things in connection to Krishna and their practical application, then when application comes, you'll be able to use them. So basically it comes down to what we discussed before. Manana is not being applied. So there's not the contemplation of the knowledge in connection to its application. They're thinking about applying things, or they're thinking about Krishna, but not about connecting all this. So if that's there, then you take more advantage. And then beyond that, why learn knowledge that is not so important to know? Because if it can be used for Krishna, then it has a value. But if it's just for interest's sake, then that's what crows are doing. They're interested. Maybe there's something there. You know, it's like when you throw the garbage, then maybe something's there. And so then the young crows very enthusiastically go picking through it, because maybe there's there, you know. But you see, the old crows, because they've picked through a lot of garbage, and they know most of it's garbage, therefore they wait for the young crows until they find something. And when they find something, then they come over. Right? So they're not interested in all that knowledge anymore. Just what's practical. Does that make sense? So when we're always seeing things in connection with Krishna, then we will therefore be able to practically apply what we know. No one can say when such desires were awakened in them. And therefore it is said anadi karma. Right? Because it's happening before time. Time is within the material world. Here you have time. Spiritual world, time is a servant of Krishna. Here it's a controller of the living entity. There it's simply a servant of Krishna. So there is no time as such. So when such desires were awakened in the living entities of the illusory energy, that you can't say. Therefore, anadi. But if we're going to take and put it into time, that means, oh, it's always been there. That's mundane intelligence. It's not spiritual. It's mundane. The cause of such material existence is untraceable. No one knows when material life began. But it is a fact that it does have a point of beginning. Because ordinarily, originally, every living entity is a spiritual spark. As the sparks falling into the ground from a fire has a beginning, so a living entity's coming to this material world has a beginning. But no one can say when. Even though during the time of disillusion, all the conditioned living entities remain merged in the spiritual existence of the Lord, as if in deep sleep, the original desires to lord it over the material nature do not subside. So even though they go back to Krishna and are absorbed in Krishna at the time of the disillusion, their desires to lord it over the material energy still remain. Because as soon as then they manifest again and they're awake, these desires come up. Yes?
We once discussed that, for example, demons, when they were killed by the person, I don't exactly remember, but they get liberation.
Yes.
So they, at this point, when they merge back to the Lord, and then we said that there they can choose. When they can't,
yeah, but a disillusion, that's another thing. But that's in between. When they see, you can come to someone like that, they come to the liberated platform. That can be while the Lord's awake. We're pointing out it's all living entities, because even if you say, oh no, but then they go back to Him. But because they haven't changed their consciousness, then that original material desire they had before they merged back into the Lord at disillusion, they still have when they come out.
So basically, this time when they are inside the Lord, merged into Him, nothing changes.
Yeah, nothing's going on there. No.
So they are passive.
Yeah, because everybody's, it says, as if in deep sleep. They're as if in deep sleep, but it's not that they've forgotten their material desires.
So we cannot call this association with the Lord?
No.
In 12th canto, it's mentioned about different kinds of annihilation.
Right.
Then the first is like the between Manvantara or something. And the second is the one which is mentioned here. And the third annihilation which is mentioned is the Karma Sharira of the Jiva. So it is with respect to Jiva, it has nothing to do with...
with the Lord.
With what is happening according to time or...
Oh, okay.
So that the third one is what Mataji was mentioning. So it is given a separate category on his own.
The Karana Sharira. I mean, it means that are the demons.
The Jivas, when they go beyond the, I mean, they merge back.
Right.
That is considered categorized as a separate annihilation among the three annihilations.
Oh, okay, yes, because that's the overall. So the whole Mahatattva winds up like that. Because others, they're happening within the universe. Mm-hmm. So they all go back into, you know, I think into Garbhadaksha, Vishnu, or into Kiradaksha like this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No? The only partially. He was just saying is that there's different annihilations. So depending upon what you're talking here is that one into Mahavishnu. Yeah, but there the Karana Sharira still does not leave the living entity. That's why then they remain their original desires, because that Karana Sharira is the desire to control and enjoy. So that is maintained, though they appear to be deep sleep, but that's still there. Then when they manifest, when he breathes out, when the next creation is there, then they continue that I'm going to control and enjoy, but in the specifics of their desires. Right? But the demons, what you're talking about there, they go into, merge into Brahman, but they, in that state, they have no material desires. Right? Because they've been purified, they've been liberated. But the point of control and enjoy may remain. Right? It still has that aspect of the Karana Sharira. But now, and as long as they're absorbed in Brahman, they're okay. But how long can you do nothing, you know, where in a situation nothing's identifiable? Right? Means if, you know, it's white, white light, everything's white, there's no distinguishing, how long can you sit there? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Then at some point they will start to think and want to do activities to be happy. So now they have the activities that they did in the material world to remember, you know, from the Karma Sharira. Or, because they're now purified, and they were killed by the Lord so they can remember the Lord. But now being purified, they don't have the accumulated impurities that would make them inimical to the Lord. So now in the transcendental platform, they are able to appreciate the transcendental glory of the Lord and can see the difference between the happiness of the transcendental position in connection with the Lord and the material connected with the material world. So then they can therefore meditate on the Lord and in that way give up that Karana Sharira, because they give up the I'm going to be control and joy and go back to Vaikuntha. Or they could, you know, under that influence of the Karana Sharira, remember the material world and come back. But from what I understand, is it mentioned if they generally don't come back or they generally go?
It is mentioned as a category of annihilation, but the process, how it happens with the jiva, that is not mentioned.
Oh, that's somewhere else then. There's another place that's describing this. Okay. Is that? Yeah.
It describes where?
This is in...
12th canto.
Huh?
12th canto.
12th canto. Coming up this year. Yes. Again, when there's cosmic manifestation, they come out to fulfill the same desires, and therefore they appear in different species of life. The Shrutis continued. Neither material nature nor the soul who tries to enjoy her are ever born. Yet, living bodies come into being when these two combine, just as bubbles form where water meets air, and just as rivers merge into the ocean, or the nectar from many different flowers blends into honey. So all these conditioned beings eventually merge back into you, the Supreme, along with their various names and qualities. Footnote 11. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 31 to Bhagavad Arka Mitshumala, chapter 10, entitled Characteristics of the Inconceivable Oneness and Difference, Achinta Beta Beta Lakshana, which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakur's book. Okay. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the personified Vedas continued, Dear Lord, it is therefore our conclusion that all living entities are attracted by your material energy, and only due to their mistakenly identifying themselves as products of the material nature are they transmigrating from one body to another in forgetfulness of their eternal relationship with you. Because of ignorance, these living entities misidentify themselves in different species of life. And especially when elevated to the human form of life, they identify with a particular class of men, or a particular nation, or race, or so-called religion, forgetting their real identity as external servants of your lordship. Due to this faulty conception of life, they are undergoing repeated birth and death. Out of many millions of them, if one becomes intelligent enough by association with pure devotees, he comes to the understanding of Krishna consciousness and comes out of the jurisdiction of the material conception. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is confirmed by Lord Chaitanya that the living entities are wandering within this universe in different species of life. But if one of them becomes intelligent enough by the mercy of the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, then he begins his devotional life in Krishna consciousness. It is said, Harim Vina Na Mritim Taranti, without the help of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot get out of the clutches of repeated birth and death. In other words, only the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, can relieve the conditioned souls from the cycle of repeated birth and death. Right? So, by not being interested in the Lord, they have come here by the Lord's arrangement. But it's only when we surrender to the Lord, then by the Lord's arrangement, we can go back to the spiritual position. Right? So that's why it's always about devotion, always about surrendering to Krishna. The Shrutis continued, the wise souls who understand how your Maya deludes all human beings render potent loving service to you, who are the source of liberation from birth and death. How, indeed, can fear of material life affect your faithful servants? On the other hand, your furrowing eyebrows, the triple-rimmed wheel of time, repeatedly terrify those who refuse to take shelter of you. Right? So even those who are interested in liberation, they're terrified of Krishna in the form of time, because that creates all their misgivings. So they want to go beyond this to get away from that fear. But they don't have the right solution. They don't want to surrender to Krishna. As we mentioned before, that's all we have to do is just surrender to Krishna. Right?
Jiva Goswami defines time as the agitator of action.
The agitator of action, yes.
So with this simple definition we can understand material world, the agitator of action is through time. Spiritual world, everybody performs actions because of their initiative.
Because of prema. Yes, yeah, very nice. Does that make sense? Didn't even hear what you said. Okay. So, he's saying that Jiva Goswami is describing that simple definition of time is the agitator of action. So therefore, in the material world, time agitates the things so that therefore you perform activities. You choose what activities and this and that. And action happens, results happen, you enjoy, you suffer, all these different things. But in the spiritual world, then that's not the reason anybody does anything. They're not agitated by time. They're only doing it because it pleases Krishna. So in this way, there's no time. Right? It appears that there's that effect of past, present, and future. But it's only there to serve the pastimes. They're not being controlled by it.
Triple-rimmed wheel. Why it is triple-rimmed?
Triple-rimmed. You don't like triple rims?
Past, present, future.
Past, present, future. Okay? Yes. So one of them will run you over. Don't worry. They don't miss. The Shrutis continue. The wise souls who understand how your Maya deludes all human beings render potent loving service to you. Well, we just read that. Okay. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. This is the sense. The Vaishnavas are not eager to destroy others' opinions and establish their own as other philosophers are prone to do. That's not why we get involved in these things. We're not learning this for that purpose. Because then it's a bit, again, about right, wrong, and this, that. It's all still duality. Right? They are extremely eager to engage in worshiping you. In that, there's no challenging opponents of other philosophies at all. But the Vaishnava philosophy is the essence of all scriptures. Right? So they're not eager about that. They just want to serve Krishna. So therefore, they follow the Shastra, how it shows how to serve Krishna. Right? So then, if someone doesn't understand that, then out of kindness, then they try to show them that, try to teach them that, how they also can develop that love for Krishna and be inspired in that way. So then, any difference of opinion there is simply to establish their proper understanding of devotional service. It's not about defeating others in argument. Right? For philosophers, that's their taste, is how to defeat others. So the better they are at the skill, the better they are at the knowledge, then that's what happens. Right? One should understand that the jivas who arise in the creation have oneness with the Lord because they are the tatastha shakti of the Lord. Some are conditioned, covered by cloud like ignorance, and others are liberated, free from the coverings of ignorance, by knowledge with a tinge of devotion. And others with pure or predominantly pure bhakti are perfected devotees freed from the coverings of ignorance with chidananda bodies suitable for service. And others are the eternal associates who never had connection with ignorance at all. These are the four types of devotees. Their characteristics are mentioned in the Narada Pancharatra. So, means you have those who are always eternally associates of the Lord, so they're not going to have that. The jivas by nature as tatastha shakti, then they are pure, and there's that tinge of bhakti, tinge of devotion. Because it hasn't necessarily become serious, it hasn't turned into prema, but that tinge is there because that's the nature of the soul. Right? Then you have those that are covered by ignorance. Right? Right? And so then when you free yourself from that, you get back to that same position of freed from the coverings with that tinge of devotion. Right? Then you move forward, and then when you have that pure, predominantly pure bhakti, then they are the, come to that transcendental position. Right? Then one can come to that position that one is in the fire like those in the fourth category, but one is always their servants. That's why we're always servant of the servants. You may be on the same transcendental position, but one will never be them. Right? Because they're always there. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the personified Vedas continued, the influence of time, past, present, and future, and the material miseries, such as excessive heat, excessive cold, birth, death, old age, and disease, are all simply the movements of your eyebrows. Everything is working under your direction. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita that all material activity is going on under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. The Vedas continued. All the conditions of material existence are opposing elements for persons who are not surrendered unto you. But for those who are surrendered souls and are in full Krishna consciousness, these things cannot be a source of fear. When Lord Nrsimhadev appeared, Prahlad Maharaj was never afraid of him, whereas his atheist father was immediately faced with death personified and was killed. Therefore, although Lord Nrsimhadev appeared as death for an atheist like Hiranyakashipu, he is always kind and is the reservoir of all pleasure for the devotees like Prahlad. A pure devotee is not, therefore, afraid of birth, death, old age, and disease. Because this is Krishna's, the time factor is doing these, but because they're devoted to Krishna, they're never afraid of these. Right? You know, just like Hiranyakashipu is afraid, Prahlad Maharaj is not. Sripad Sridhar Swami has composed a nice verse in this regard, the meaning of which is as follows. My dear Lord, I am a living entity perpetually disturbed by the conditions of material existence. I have been cracked to pieces by the smashing wheel of material existence. And because of my various sinful activities, while existing in the material world, I am burning in the blazing fire of material reactions. Somehow or other, my dear Lord, I have come to take shelter under your lotus feet. Please accept me and give me protection. Yes? No? Okay. The conclusion is that any process of self-realization or God-realization, other than bhakti yoga or devotional service, is extremely difficult. Taking shelter of devotional service to the Lord in full Krishna consciousness is therefore the only way to become free from the contamination of material conditioned life. Especially in this age, those who are not in Krishna consciousness are simply wasting their time, and they have no tangible proof of spiritual life. Right? In other ages, by following those dharmas, and that with detachment, they could elevate themselves to the liberated platform, and therefore be transcendental. Though it will be temporary. Right? But in this age, that's why I said especially this age, is because by what's going on in this age, you can't liberate yourself. You're not going to bring yourself to that. So you only have the actual real liberation. Other ages, they have liberation and real liberation, or devotional service. In this age, there's only real liberation. There's no liberation. You have to be quite materially qualified for that. Mm-hmm. But for real liberation, you don't require mundane qualification. Right? It's the nature of the soul, yes.
Right, sometimes devotees confused. Srila Prabhupada mentions that devotional service is a simple process.
Yes.
But it's not as easy as it appears in the beginning. And then we see in the Bhagavatam, not actually many devotees went back to Godhead within one lifetime. It didn't happen to Narada, didn't happen to Ajamil, didn't happen to Bharat Maharaj. So there's some kind of...
Well, what about all the Brajbasis and the Dorkavasis? They went that lifetime. Right? Ayodhyavasis also, then. Lord Ram, when he went, he took all the Ayodhyavasis with him. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, these examples are just to show, even if you don't go, still the devotee, his devotional service is not lost. Still everything's auspicious. Because you see, where are they continuing from? You know, from a great position, a very solid position. So that's what those examples are for. They're not to show, oh no, it's too hard to go and this and that. They're not for that. They're to show that even if somehow or another you don't, still there's no loss and everything will be glorious. Right? In other words, the glass is half full. Does that make sense? It is as simple as it is in the beginning. It's that we complicate it by bringing back our material desires. We take up Krishna consciousness, we give up all the material desires, we just focus on, you know, what we're supposed to do, and it's very nice and very ecstatic. Then we start to allow our own material desires to come up, and then it's the same principle. It's just as you followed authority in doing things that didn't have any connection with material desires, because they were direct devotional activities, then you also, in the same principle, apply the indirect. But since if you want to deal with the mundane, then you need a little bit more knowledge and technique to deal. The direct is very easy because it's natural for the soul. The indirect means then you have to have more knowledge because it's based on the jnana and kriya shaktis. Right? So that jnana shakti has to be there because you're identifying yourself in that material position. So the jnana is necessary. But it's, that's our choice. We don't have to do that, but by our conditioning, it may be a standard thing to do. So then they just have to know is that, well, what Shastra says, how you're to engage the senses, that's what you do. And if that's done, then we'll see is it has that same simplicity. It's more, it may be more, has so many sophisticated elements to it, but it doesn't actually have to be complicated. Means it's not actually connected to the main point. Right? It doesn't directly get the work done. So, of the complications, you want to pick what's the most direct as possible. But then we'll complicate that with other things, you know, prestige or this or that, or, you know, it's just like, let's say, if you want to be close to work, right? There are places that are close to work. But much of the time, those places are not in, socially developed areas. Does that make sense? So, because we want that prestige, so there we have to live in a place that's more prestigious, but then we have to go farther distance to work. Right? Does that make sense? So, that whole difficulty comes up. You know, so, or we want to spend more on this and less on that, so you could spend more on the place to stay if that's closer to work, then you have less to spend on other things. So we're putting in the conditions, and because of that, it gets more complex. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, but the principle of the indirect is seen in connection with the Lord and engaged in that way is simple also. You have to have the knowledge of that area, but it's still, the principle is very simple. But so you could say is that, one, the materialists don't know about this because they're not interested. And, you know, those who know about piety, they'll be performing those pious activities, so that'll work for them. But it still won't satisfy because it doesn't have the transcendental, result. Then you'll have and then the devotees, then they'll come in and they see it just as that simple, but they're not looking at the principle, they're simply looking at the secondary. So when their situation changes in secondary, then they think it's something completely different. It's not the same when it actually is. The principle always applies. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you need to stir some drink. So you can use a spoon, you could use a fork, you could use a swizzle stick, you could use a chopstick, you know, you could use a knife. You know, so many things you could do. Does that make sense? You know, you could shake it around inside your shoe. You know, many things you could do. Right? But it's just a matter of, you know, what's available or about the prestige or this or that or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, just like, let's say you want to stir your tea and you're sitting down with someone else and everybody feels very aristocratic. Okay? Now, so they will all be stirring their tea with their spoon. But technically, a fork will actually be more efficient because the fork will actually create more swirls in the tea, and therefore whatever they want to mix will actually mix more effectively. But if you pull out a small fork, everyone will look at you like, what, is this dessert or what? You know? So we complicate it, even though it may be more efficient that way. Does that make sense? You know, a swizzle stick won't be as effective. Right? You know, swizzle stick? No? It's those funny little sticks with little, generally little balls at the end that you get when they give you drinks, you know, like that. And so it's because it may separate from your sitting and talking and all this and that because, you know, it costs a ridiculous amount. You don't want to just swill it in one shot, you know, like that. So you sit there and nurse it. So therefore, you know, you use that to mix it up. Gives you something else to do, right? So then, what do you call it? Time. Gives some action, so then there's something. Yeah. But it's not actually very efficient. It only works if things are already liquids. If you're trying to mix solids and liquids, it's not actually very effective. number six. Yes. So the whole point is that because we're not studying this technique, which you see is given all the way through, that's the whole point of karma, jnana, and then that combination in the fifth chapter of Gita. This process has already been given. You know, it's a technical process. It's already been given. But generally it's not noted. And so therefore it appears that it's a completely different situation. And so then when we try to say it's all equal, but we're still not seeing on the principle, we're just seeing on the secondary. So it doesn't matter if you're doing this or that. And so since more of us are doing this, that's better than that, because by volume this is greater, so this is more important. Rather than, no, the principle is being that of connecting everything to Krishna. So what do you require? So the brahmacharya requires very little. The grihastha requires quite a bit. The vanaprastha then cuts down on what's required to just what's essential. In other words, what are the essentials from the grihastha life? That they keep. Does that make sense? And then what is actually essential just for direct devotional service, they're moving in that direction. So you start from all the grihastha stuff down to just what's actually, you know, basically necessary now. Then just as time goes and it's more and more just about direct devotional service, then it starts getting less. So it's the same principle. It's not changing. It's what is necessary to engage in the Lord's service. So since brahmacharis only have that service, there is only direct activity. So their indirect is very, very minimal. Like that. In fact, most of them don't even notice it. Right? So then it goes into, because, you know, one brahmachari is not going to care that another one looks like a slob. Right? But grihastha life, that doesn't work. Does that make sense? Is that okay?
Yeah.
So it's a matter of understanding this aspect of the philosophy. It's always been there. Fifth chapter of Gita has always been there. But it's just a matter of understanding its application. But so we may apply it to the details that we have and which you can do, and you'll progress. But when you understand the principle of what you're applying, then you're not bewildered when things expand or contract according to the time, place, and circumstance.
I would say in general that feminine mentality is quite complex, and that masculine is quite simple by nature.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah, because where's the variety? Is it in the masculine or the feminine?
It's in the feminine.
Right. It's just like a man goes through a variety of things until he finds the one that he finds works the best. And then he'll use that, you know, for time immemorial, and unless it either falls apart, and then he'll just replace it with the same thing, or if it's not available, then he'll go through the process again to find the one that's there. Right? But the feminine nature goes through the variety of things for the taste. And then you'll cut it down to which aspects within that variety are your main tastes, so you'll go through those. But when those become, you've done those, then you'll go extend beyond that, even to what is not a good taste, just so that the good taste, it's just like you go on a holiday. And it's great because you're not at home. But then the problem with the holiday, it ends. So then, technically, there needs to be something bad about the holiday so that when you go home, you're happy to be home. Right? And so if you're thinking, wow, I wasted all that time and money and effort and all that because they didn't like the holiday. No, they loved the holiday. But the problem is holidays end. So then if you go home, you'll be lamenting about that. You won't enjoy home. So you have to find fault in the holiday. Then you can appreciate being at home. And then at some point, you'll find fault in home so you can go on the holiday. Because you're sitting at home. Right? You haven't even take care of everything like that, and it's going running very smoothly. You know, your economics, your schedules, everything's going very nice, but it gets, you know, boring. So now you have to go on a holiday. But now holiday, you spend way more. It's so much more inconsistent. It's inconsistent what you know, your food, your arrangements, and this and that. And so it's actually a way more of a trip. But this has to be bad so that you'll put in the effort there. Does that make sense? So the complication is coming in, tasting the variety. But that's the principle. It's always like that. So if that simple principle is understood, then it doesn't bother you, these constant changes. It's because one wants the external form to be simple. No, the principle is simple. Right? And so then the masculine is also the same. It's simple. Right? It means make the effort to make things, you know, work. To make things, you know, flow. To make it happen. Like that. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the principle is the same. So even if you have so much or unlimited varieties of situations to apply that simple principle to, it doesn't change the, what do you call it? It doesn't change the simplicity of it. Right? It's just that one has to accept that the principle is the actual simple thing. And the detail, that's where variety comes in. But because you always see it in connection with the principle, it's never bewildering. Right? And so if that's always there, then with practice, you start to see what's there. And never point out the principle. That, otherwise, details that you never even imagined will manifest. Right? Because it's not about this, not about that. It's just about going on with the things. So it's just as it goes. Yeah, yeah, no, it's so good to be back home. Yeah, yeah, no, I think, yeah, we've been here, so it's time to get out. Not, you know, didn't we go last year? What's going on? What do you mean? It costs so much. No. You understand? It's how to practically go with the flow. And the other is how to constantly create that flow. Right? Does that make sense? One creates it, one does the, you know, the grunt work. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yes. And this, Prabhupada is using this phrase, devotional service and full Krishna consciousness.
Devotional service and full Krishna consciousness, yes.
Prabhupada uses this phrase many times. What is the importance? Is there...
What's the importance of devotional service means the activities that are devoted to Krishna, but in full Krishna consciousness means it's always about Krishna, not about, we're not aware of Krishna, or there may be some, you know, karma and jnana involved or things like that. So full devotional service means it's always about Krishna and always conscious of Krishna. Because prema, that's what it would be. And if it's not that, but it's devotional service but not fully Krishna conscious, that's bhava. And then when it's, you know, has other things, then it drops down into the madhyama platform, then down, you know, down into sadhana bhakti, and then down into, you know, like this. Same thing. Okay. Okay, it is said by Lord Ramachandra, quote, I always give confidence and security to anyone who surrenders unto me and decides definitely that he is my eternal servant, right? Decides definitely, not, yeah, today, maybe, but tomorrow, yeah. For that is my natural inclination. Similarly, right, because why the lack of confidence and lack of security? Right? What's the benefit of lacking confidence and lacking security? When we're talking on this transcendental overview. If the jiva is not feeling confident and not feeling secure in the material world, what's their inclination? To get out. Yeah, they want to find a place that is secure so they can have that confidence. Right, so when you surrender to Krishna and decide definitely he's his eternal servant, that you're absorbed in service to Krishna, then what? Then you don't need to be insecure and lack confidence by being in the material world. You can be confident and be secure because you're in devotional service. But you don't apply it to the mundane. You understand that the mundane is always like that drop of water on the lotus leaf. Right, so when we're talking eternal time, then it's going to move. You know, when, whether it's this lifetime, next lifetime, whatever, it doesn't matter. You know, it's like people, they become rich and they're rich for lifetimes. Or it can go away in a moment. It doesn't matter, because on eternal time, they're all just a moment. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so therefore, as when one sees everything in connection to Krishna, then Krishna gives that confidence and security that you feel satisfied, that satisfaction. Because, why? Because you're connected to Krishna. What can go wrong? Even if something goes wrong, you leave the body, where do you go? Right? To the spiritual world. So what's the loss? You give up this body that's full of, you know, disease and old age and all kinds of other annoying things, and you go back to Godhead. Is that a loss? Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. It means you can change, just like in the Gita, it's talking about a change of clothes, you know, from one body to the next. Okay, so you go from this change, okay, you get a new change. Even on the material, mundane platform, even they're going to take birth again, still they got a new body, and that's the good part. And then they'll get old, and then they'll change their new body, and so what's the lament? Right? But here it's being offered, you'll change into a set of clothes that you don't have to change it because it gets old. Right? Does that make sense? And it's so perfect, you don't want to change it. Yeah? Okay. Similarly, Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the influence on the material nature is insurmountable, but anyone who surrenders unto me can verily overcome the influence of material nature. The devotees are not at all interested in arguing with the non-devotees to nullify their theories. Rather than wasting time, they always engage themselves in the transcendental loving service of the Lord in full Krishna consciousness. So that's the point, is that it's about discussing Krishna consciousness, not about arguing. Right? Have you ever come across a thing where you're out on distributing books, you bump into some guy, you argue like for 3 hours and all that, but you know, it kind of works out, but doesn't quite and all that, but they don't take a book, you know, and then they come back and they say, well, that was a waste of time. You know, and you're thinking, no, but you know, I defeated him here and there, and we established this and that. It says, yeah, but the book's going to last a long time. He's going to forget what you said. Right? Or maybe he did take a book, but then why do you need 3 hours for that? Right? It's just enough that they're interested in Krishna consciousness. That's all. You don't have to get down and argue over every little thing. You know, does that make sense? You know. The Shrutis continue. The mind is like an impetuous horse that even persons who have regulated their senses and breath cannot control. Those in this world who try to tame the uncontrolled mind, but who abandon the feet of their spiritual master, encounter hundreds of obstacles in their cultivation of various distressful practices. O unborn Lord, they are like merchants on a boat in the ocean who have failed to employ a helmsman. Footnote 12. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 33 to Bhagavad Akramichi Mala, chapter 9, entitled Characteristics of the Fortunate Soul. Bhagya Jeev Lakshanam, which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakur's book. Right, so this is the fortunate soul who surrenders to the spiritual master. Right? Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Personified Vedas continue. Dear Lord, although great mystic yogis may have full control over the elephant of the mind and the hurricane of the senses, okay, that's why it's so difficult, right? Unless they take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, they fall victim to the material influence and are never successful in their attempts at self-realization. They've controlled this, they still won't be successful in self-realization. Because without surrendering to the spiritual master, how will they know who Krishna is? Such unguided persons are compared to merchants going to sea on a ship without a captain. Right? They have the goods, they have the money, but the captain knows where to go. Right? By one's personal attempts, therefore, one cannot get free from the clutches of material nature. One has to accept a bona fide spiritual master and work according to his direction. Then it is possible to cross over the nescience of material conditions. Right? So it's according to the instructions, like Prabhupada says, it's not a fashion, it's the instruction. Sri Prad Sridhar Swami has composed a nice verse in this connection in which he says, O all-merciful spiritual master, representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when my mind will be completely surrendered unto your lotus feet, at that time, only by your mercy, I shall be able to get relief from all obstacles to spiritual life, and I shall be situated in blissful life. So if someone is saying, oh, so many obstacles are so complicated, or so this, it's a matter of surrendering to the spiritual master. That's there. When you take up the instructions, then you'll see all these obstacles go, as Lord Ramachandra said. That security, that confidence comes, so there is no complication. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.